This is Behind the Curtain with Justin Scott and Spiegel on 98 Rock.
Coming up, you're going to hear an interview that we had a chance to do with Daniel Craig. Logan Lucky came out yesterday in theaters. It's like plus 90% fresh, Rotten Tomatoes. Looks pretty funny. And you asked a good question of him, Josh, about how does he just get to be a dude? He gets to be a dude.
Lots of dudes.
A lot of dudes. No, it's like, how do you be a normal person? How are you Bond, but then you get to go in and have to renew your driver's license?
Let's put it this way. The likes of a Josh Spiegel can barely even go out in public around here in Baltimore, being the megastar he is. Now, times that by a gazillion being Daniel Craig. But he said he lives in New York, and
times it by 40.
I do kind of love the anonymity that comes with living in New York. You just throw on like a ball cap, and he even says it. He's like, nobody cares about me. It's New York. They're busy doing their own thing. You just throw on a ball cap and some sunglasses and rip down the street, and 9 times out of 10, you're getting where you got to go, and nobody even thinks twice.
Yeah, that does seem to be the attire for the celebrity in New York, is just the ball cap, maybe the hoodie.
Unless you're John Lennon.
Yes, unless you're... Oh, God.
Oh,
we
God.
Talked to Daniel Craig.
Oh, God.
Too soon.
Too soon.
Good morning, Justin Scott and Spiegel on the flagship station of the Baltimore Ravens in theaters nationwide. Friday, August 18th. This has got an absolutely incredible cast. It's getting incredible reviews. And it's got an amazing director. And we're joined by the star, Logan Lucky. Daniel Craig joins us on the program. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Hey, thank you for taking the time. I read the synopsis of this. By the way, the advertising campaign is incredible. You've never looked like a larger maniac in a commercial, just cackling like a madman in the back of that vehicle, covered in all kinds of great tattoos and what have you, is one of the Logan clan, an explosives expert. It's you. It's Channing Tatum. You've got Steven Soderbergh, by the way, who's an incredible director. I mean, really, it's a pretty incredible lineup.
Yeah, I mean, it's a job which is an offer you can't refuse, really. Steven Soderbergh obviously retired from movie making, and you know, God bless, he came back, and he was doing this movie, and he offered me a part called Joe Bang, who's a demolitions expert. I said I'm in. I don't have to read it. I'm in. And
now let me ask you, when you see your character in Logan Lucky in these promo shots, I mean, you've got this great crazy blonde head of hair, and I mean, you're a blonde gentleman to begin with, but then it's almost like they put some kind of insane peroxide in, and they cover you in these wild looking prison tattoos. How long did it take to put on all of those that temporary?
Thankfully, not too long.
Prison art.
Not too long. Thankfully, I mean, by the time we started shooting, we were pretty practiced at it. The girls who were doing it, we had a great makeup team who kind of had a production line, because a lot of the characters had tattoos, so we had to sort of sit there quietly. I used to sort of stick my earbuds in and listen to music, and it takes an hour or two to stick them on.
And Daniel Craig, no stranger to the small stage in the theaters, and I would imagine, is that like your first love? Because every time we talk to actors who have also done stage and movies, you know, movies are a lot of hurry up and wait, and it takes a long time for the movie to come out, and by the time the movie comes out, you've already moved on. Where when you're on the stage, I mean, it's immediate, you're right in front of a bunch of people. That's just got to be an amazing rush, and I would imagine your true first love. Would I be correct in saying that?
I don't know if it's... the honest truth is I just love working. I get a kick out of it. But they're two obviously very different things, and you know, it's the same kind of prep. You have to sort of just prep yourself. I mean, you're lucky enough to have a rehearsal period when you're doing theater, and which, you know, you kind of try and figure it out, but you have to do the same thing before you start a film. And there's nothing like playing in front of a live audience. Anybody will tell you that, whether you're, you know, it's an actor or a musician. It's like you get out there and there's a bunch of people who come to see you. It certainly concentrates the mind.
Now, what is it like being Daniel Craig on a daily basis? You walk around...
Very, very, very boring.
No.
No.
Is it? Is it really
boring? Breaking my heart.
No, not a day. For me, it's I'm not who people see me as. I mean, that's a kind of very, very obvious thing to say, but it's just, my life is as normal as it can possibly be. I have
how do you go about your daily life with people staring at you everywhere you go? You know, how do you?
I live in New York. People are more interested in their own lives than they are in
right. Me. Now, how do you do something like get your driver's license renewed? Do you have to get somebody to do that?
I go down and do it. No, I go down and do it. I mean, the same thing. If I get jury duty, I've got to go down and do it. It's like, you know, it's like everybody else. there's no get out clause. I wish there was, but there isn't.
And Daniel, I'd be remiss.
I'm a movie star. I can't possibly do that. Like, can you imagine doing that in New York?
Please, they would destroy you.
Oh yeah, they're not going to take that very
hey,
lightly.
Hey, forget about it. Get over here, Daniel.
Hey, Bond, you
get in line like everybody else.
Hey, I got to ask you too.
James Bond, cut in line. Oh, look at James.
He kissed my 007 ass, said Bond. Hey, I'll shake you and I'll stir you. I have to ask you about James Bond. I'm the big Bond fan in the room, and not coming across as creepy, but maybe in my office, there's a gigantic picture of you from Quantum of Solace clutching the machine gun as you walk up Mr. White's steps.
Right.
And, you know, it's announced Bond 25 you're going to do. What made you want to return to that role? Because I remember when you were finished with Spectre, you said...
I hate to burst your bubble, guys, but no decision's been made.
No decision yet. Okay.
Okay.
There's
a lot of he said, she said stuff going
gotcha.
On.
Gotcha. All right. I won't confirm anything. Well, I'll tell you...
I'm just going to stay out of it.
As a fan, you don't have to respond. You are side by side with Connery as the best James Bond.
Wow.
You added a grit to that role. You added a realism to that role. And you have, outside of Auric Goldfinger aiming a laser at James Bond's penis in the one film, the worst torture scene I've ever seen with someone just swinging a knotted up rope underneath of a seatless chair directly into your man parts, Le Chiffre in Casino Royale. Still
I'm
have
very
trouble.
Glad you're the person, I'm very glad you were the first person to say penis in this interview. That's all.
Yes. Well, there's plenty more to come. Okay, well, good. I'll wait for developments to come officially from that.
I will let you know.
Gotcha. Hey, let me talk to you about some of your castmates in here, because you're working with Channing Tatum, who I believe worked alongside Steven Soderbergh in Magic Mike, and you're working with Adam Driver, who's the villain in the new Star Wars film, Kylo Ren, and he's a very intense individual. Just he's a physically intense person to look at.
I think he's very pretty, but that's just me. He's very, very funny. Adam, as is Channing, obviously, he's a very kind of the atmosphere on set was just it was very heightened and very funny to be just around them, because everybody's trying to out-joke each other, and we're just trying to kind of keep things bubbling along. And the movie itself lent itself to that. That you know, we kind of the characters are having fun. The characters are those kind of the kind of people that don't let life get them down. So it was a joy.
Now, and I know you've been to Baltimore a couple of times because you were spotted. You were spotted a few.
I've been to Baltimore many times. Yeah,
yes. We saw
but
you.
I tell you a story. I was in Whole Foods in the. In the grocery section,
right
in Baltimore, when the phone call came through and I was told I had the movie for, I was told I was going to do Casino Royale.
Oh, wow, that's cool!
And I dropped all of my groceries. I had a cart. I pushed my cart to the end and something like that, and went straight into the liquor department and bought myself a bottle of vodka.
Wow, yes,
it's funny
cool.
You brought that story up, because I was thinking about that, like prepping for this video. I was going to ask him, you know, what is it like to get that phone call? Like, hey, you're James Bond. And there it was. It's like...
I got seriously drunk. And I got,
just martinis for days.
I went out and I sat in a bar. I can't remember the name of the bar. And I sat there and I was drinking. And I was just smiling a lot. And literally the barman said, hey, what's going on? And I was like, I can't tell you. Sorry.
I'm locked down. Well, let me ask you...
You wouldn't believe me, but it's like, you know, I've got to keep it under my hat.
Can I ask you a hypothetical? Because so cool. You've done four great Bond films. You've got, you know, Logan Lucky coming out this weekend. It's 90%+ fresh on Rotten Tomatoes. Let's just say, hypothetically, you never return to that Bond role. Again, all hypothetical here. Who is a fan of the Bond franchise yourself? Would you like to see assume that mantle? One day when you're done playing Bond and you move on to do whatever, who would you like to see?
It's a very loaded question. I would get into a lot of trouble if I even began to try and answer it. I don't care. I mean, I do care, but I, only care. I care in the sense that that as long as they're good, and they do, you know, they make it. It's the best job in the world.
Yeah.
And I've been incredibly fortunate to have done it, and it's just you've got to go. I set out when I got the job. I said I've got to just try and leave it in as good a shape as I found it, and that's all it is.
You improved upon it. I was also a fan of the George Lazenby Bond, you know, the one and done, mm-hmm. where he added a grit, and you brought that back. You made the fight scenes believable. The plots were grounded. It still had that great international James Bond jet-setting flavor, but it wasn't to the level of a schlocky Moonraker. While still entertaining in its own right, you just made it very genuine and very, very good for a new generation of Bond films.
You're
like myself,
kind,
and I can't wait to see Logan Lucky. It's going to be in theaters nationwide Friday, August 18th. The reviews are incredible. Soderbergh returns to form. You got a great cast, and Daniel, I appreciate you taking the time with us this morning.
My pleasure. Thank you so much.
We now take you behind the curtain with Justin Scott and Spiegel on 98 Rock.
Ooh, Mike Anderson, Sauce Anderson, customer service Mikey, almost drove his waiting room on wheels through the front door of a local chicken shack because they attempted to charge him for sauce. Mike, has the rage subsided? Say the same,
yeah,
or increased?
Yeah, it's gone down a little bit. I felt better after I went on Yelp, and I realized that I wasn't the only one. You know,
so you Yelped that specific location?
Oh, yeah, and it was like 2 stars out of 5. And I read through some of the reviews, and it was just, you know, same deal. You know, everything screwed up, orders completely botched, stuff undercooked, overcooked. So, yeah, I was like, okay, well, I'm amongst many, so it kind of made me feel better about it.
How do they do that, by the way? I mean, considering this place, again, it will go unnamed, but I feel for the most part you have to stand in line with their company policies. I guess there's some wiggle room for franchisees.
Well, no, remember I read an article that day. I found an article. I read it, and it said that as a franchisee, you can take, you know, it's up to you to decide small things like that, whether or not you want to charge for sauces or stuff.
Yeah, that's why I like the corporately owned franchise. I'll take any day of the week, like Starbucks.
They're what does that mean, though? What is corporately
that
owned?
That means that you can't just decide what you're going to do there. They oversee everything that's happening.
You know who else does this? Because I've no BS. We should talk about this coming week. If anybody's ever like franchised anything, where I live with the amount of kids, Buck and I just lightly one night, just doing research for fun, never got anything beyond that, looked into opening a Chick-fil-A. Chick-fil-A in my neighborhood, you'd have to save your money in a Swiss bank account there. But they have such particular policies. You have to interview like thousands of people before one person gets bestowed the right to open a Chick-fil-A. To own a Chick-fil-A or to franchise a Chick-fil-A is this incredible feat. It's a guaranteed money printing operation. And they're all uniform. If one changes, they all change. You can't just go and, nah, I'm going to charge for napkins or a nope. They make one change somewhere, everyone has to do it. There's zero wiggle room, but it keeps their product uniform and high end.
Wait, you looked into that?
Yeah, I just looking it up. Like, what would it take to open a Chick-fil-A in our neighborhood and that strip mall nearby? It's a money printing machine. It's just nothing but kids. Kids are addicted to Chick-fil-A. Right across the street, there's a big sports facility over there. There's a big baseball field, baseball diamond, tennis courts, the football team practices over there. Oh, my God. But to be granted a Chick-fil-A franchise it's like winning a lottery. Like any other one, other restaurants, if you got the cash, you're going to get one. Not Chick-fil-A. They're going to interview you. They're going to do background checks, all that sort of stuff. Mike, get me a Chick-fil-A. Coming up, Anderson almost lost his mind and drove his car through the front door of a place because they wouldn't give him sauce for free. Customer service. I'm behind the curtain. Now it's time for a special live edition of
The Anderson Agenda.
Mike Anderson at Mike979. Is it Mike Anderson 979?
Yeah, on Twitter.
That's the stuff.
I retweeted on our page.
Oh, is there a tweet that I need to see in relation to this?
Yes, there is.
Okay, hold on.
I was going to respond to said tweet last night, but I didn't know if the certain players involved were clients. So,
all right.
Yeah, I won't name the location. And really, it's just this particular location of this franchise. Because there's one near me that I love. I go there all the time. It's great. Mm-hmm. I went to the one in Westminster over the weekend, and
I wanted to throw a Molotov cocktail through the window.
Jeez.
By the time I left.
Damn, that's some rage, Mike.
Hashtag Molotov rage.
Cocktail.
Old sauce.
First
Anderson.
Of all, what are you doing spending $40 at a place like that?
Well,
is that easy to do at that place?
No. Well, I got the big family meal inside.
Oh, so it's for a whole bunch of people.
Yeah, we were going to visit my girlfriend's brother who just had a baby.
Oh.
And her parents were there, so we stopped at this chicken place.
Now, is this an approved stop, or did you kind of wing it on your choice?
No, it was approved. We, you know, we called and asked, and they're like, yeah.
Because normally your go-to would be to bring them a pizza, right?
Bring
you a pizza. You love pizza.
Yeah, the pizza's together. Easy. But
you went to a chicken place.
Went to a chicken
Anyone
place.
Anyone want to get some pizza? Hey.
And so I go there. I order, you know, $40 worth of food. She hands me the bag, and I'm like, can we get some buffalo and ranch, too? And she's like, well, it's going to be 27 cents a packet.
Oh my God. What the did you say to me?
I was like, and my immediate reaction was to be like, are you effing kidding me? I almost said, it came so close to coming out of my mouth, but I restrained myself.
I had to pay for this order with a credit card. It was so big.
Why do you restrain yourself?
Yeah, just lay
in. Well, because, I mean, what's the point? And plus, it was just, there was a lot of people there. I didn't want to make a scene. But I just couldn't believe it.
So what'd you do? You just bend over and tuck it.
Spread your
cheeks. I spent the dollar and 4 cents to get the sauces, and then I left. Then I get to her brother's place, and we're pulling out the food. They forget the fries.
Oh.
Come on now. Come on.
Are you up there, God? Are you up there?
Which point I'm ready to just drive my 2010 car of the year through the front door of this place. Then I'm counting. I got a 16-piece family meal.
Oh, no.
Did you count the pieces?
One, two, three, four, five.
You counted the pieces.
And I'm like, 15.
No way.
15. Are you kidding me?
Wow.
And at that point, the tweet was sent. I'm like, that's it.
And now...
screwed, blued, and tattooed.
Yeah,
boy, you got taken to the woodshed.
The name of the place, because they may be a sponsor.
Let me scroll through here real quick.
And again, this place is great. Check. I love this place. I love their chicken. I go there all the time. It was just this
Have
particular
they responded
location.
To you?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Wait,
oh.
They responded on
Twitter, yeah. They said...
I don't know how to work Twitter. I can never follow the damn chains. Up there it is. We appreciate you reaching out. Share the details at this website.
I already shared
That's
the details.
It.
You responded.
You know the details, homie. You tweeted them out.
Idiots.
I got a 16-piece with 15 pieces of fries, no fries, and you tried to bamboozle me for sauce.
So do you still love that chicken?
I do.
Mm-hmm.
I do. I can't, like I said...
Is that from now when you
Do you still
travel,
believe the sassy Louisiana lady?
When you travel, do you certain places with certain people? Do you are you privy to theirs because they get that right?
I'm not sure what you're talking about
on the plane.
Oh yeah, they get that there. Yeah,
but do you get any of that or that's
yeah
not for
occasionally?
You?
I'll, yeah, you can if you want. Yeah, they're you know all the stewardesses are carrying around big boxes of the chicken, handing them out.
Wow.
So yeah, I do partake occasionally there too as well, but just a. To charge me for sauce on a
That's
on any
terrible.
Order, A, but especially a giant order like that to nitpick over a couple of sauces, are you kidding me? Like,
well, I know, isn't, like Chick-fil-A's very, they're just very lenient with their sauces. They just give them out.
Oh,
like,
yeah, they want you to take them.
Yeah, take them.
Right, I mean, I understand if I'm like, can I get 10 buffalo packets? Yeah, okay, maybe start charging.
Plus, what about the weird Chick-fil-A sauce cup they give you? You seen that thing? The big, tall cup that they put the packets in? No other restaurant does that. They give you a cup that looks like one of the refills for a milkshake that you order,
mm-hmm.
and they fill it with sauce packets.
Oh, nice.
It's the weirdest thing in the world. God, Chick-fil-A's got the game locked up when it comes to customer service. I will never believe that sultry Louisiana's black lady again in the commercial. Boy, you gotta come in here and try my catfish.
For an employee to like make a stand and even enforce something like that, like if I worked there, I'd be throwing sauce out like confetti.
I bet if you had asked for, like, you say, can I speak to the manager?
Do you want to be that guy, though?
Absolutely. I would be that guy. Absolutely.
Oh, wait,
I don't know if I want to be that guy.
You got a problem paying 23 cents for sauce? I guess what? It's 35 cents now.
I guess
it's something else.
It depends if I'm having a good day or not.
Yeah.
I mean, have you ever made a stink at a restaurant like that?
Yeah. I think I've told the story when I lived in Denver. Now, looking back, I regret it.
Let me
just say this.
Oh, boy.
But I once went to a sandwich shop.
Mm-hmm. Hold that thought. I want people to hear this story on the side of sports. I want to hear about A, you wiling out. B, when we come back, Mike, you always know what you wanted to have said in the car afterwards. I am going to be that
chicken employee that denied you the sauces without you paying
for
them?
Role playing? I wanted to just grab her by the hair and slam her head into the
cabin. Oh my God.
Wow. Okay.
So far, we had a Molotov cocktail. Yep. You drive the 2010 car of the year through the front door, and now grab a woman by her hair and slam her head into the
cabin. Do you know how much money I've spent in this place?
Josh, take us back to a time when you were served inappropriately.
We were talking about this bad customer service, and back when I lived in Denver in the early 2000s.
Before the weed epidemic.
That's right. I went to a sandwich shop and ordered a sandwich, and let me just say, I now regret what I did, and I wouldn't do it today.
Hey, you live and you learn, man.
Yeah.
I'm sure she had plenty of siblings.
So I ordered a sandwich. It was a sub type of sandwich. And it was a 6-incher.
Got it.
Mm.
And I even remember what was on it. Tuna. And I was presented with the sandwich, it did not appear to be 6 inches to me.
Oh, my God.
Tell me you took out a tape measure and f***ing measured that thing.
I think that I might have been having a bad day. And I challenged the person behind the counter. I said, "That's not a 6-inch sub." And
I don't think he's alone on this. I think somebody actually did a whole big thing on this.
Oh, really?
I'm looking it up. But go ahead. Cool. Go ahead. You may be before your time.
Okay. And I said, "It's not 6 inches." And he said, "Yeah, it is." And I said, "I want to speak to a manager." The manager came out, and she backed him up. She said it was 6 inches, and I left reluctantly because I was hungry. But that was my bad customer service experience. Okay?
See, what you should have done is gone, "I know 6 inches.
Yeah, exactly.
Get a look at this."
Exactly.
That's 6 inches.
If anyone's familiar with 6 inches.
This guy and the old double meat option. Holler if you hear me.
It was a class action lawsuit.
Really?
Yep.
For that?
Wow.
Mm-hmm. I didn't know that.
Because of this one. The big one?
Okay.
Nowhere near that.
Well, no, it's customers who purchased the 6 or the foot sandwiches anytime between 2003 and 2015. They claim that the...
2003 and 2015?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm in that period, I think.
You're entitled for a monetary reward.
They say that the sandwiches were being marketed as a specific length as being 12 inches, and they were not, in fact, 12 inches.
When Josh won
and
6 inches...
The 6 inches allegedly did not always measure up either.
Yeah, it definitely wasn't 6 inches. It wasn't 6 inches. I want my money back.
When Josh wants a 6, he gets a 6.
As Spiegel sees a 6 inches every day.
Yeah.
When he goes to the bathroom, he knows what it is.
It's a nice 8.5-inch sub. Mmm, tangy sauce. So, Mike was charged for sauce packets, and it just sent him into a tizzy.
And again, on a $40 order, and I didn't ask for 10 packs.
But that doesn't matter. Like, you can't factor that in. That, like, you spent $40, so, okay, they're not going to charge you.
Well, it should. It should.
Mike, you need to get a hold of Bob Farrell. He is the king of customer service. This is the guy who's famously written and showed the videos, Give 'em the Pickle. It's called the Give 'em the Pickle training video. I'm watching some of his stuff over here. It's phenomenal. I sent you a link to his website. I want him on the show before week's end, or I'm not getting good customer service from you. Let's act it out. Here I am. I am the employee. You are Mike Anderson. $40 worth of service. Okay, now I'm going to let you act out however you want to do, and feel free to physically attack me if need be. I won't fight back.
Okay, so you hand me my bag, and then I say, could I get some buffalo and ranch packs?
That's going to be 23 cents additionally, sir.
Are you effing kidding me?
It's 23 cents.
You know how much money I spent this place?
It's 23 cents additionally, sir. No.
And that's when I grab you by the hair and start smashing your head into the counter.
You can go yourself, sir. How about that? How about that? You can just full on go yourself.
Just want to kick her head off her
shoulder. Kick my fat ass. Oh, how about that?
Because, I mean, she was indignant, too. Like, it's going to be 27 cents. Like, that was going to stop me. Bitch, I'll pay the dollar.
Damn, son.
If you ever come up with an album, it has to be called Bitch, I'll Pay the Dollar.
Let's go to the phones. 410-338-1098. Oh, my God. You are... You're everything I wish I could be. Let's go to James in Westminster. James, good morning.
So I actually know where Mike's talking about and was instructed not to say the name, which I won't. But even if you don't spend $40, I stopped in there for lunch. I got a three-piece chicken tender meal. I don't know about you guys, but I like to dip every single bite of the chicken in the sauce.
Along
with my fries. Bite. Not everybody is a ketchup on their fries person.
I like a lot of sauce.
So you... Yeah, you get one sauce, one little tiny square of sauce an entire holster of fries and chicken strips, and that's how they get you, because they know you're going to want more than one sauce.
It's a racket.
It's a real
it's
racket.
It's a total racket, of course. But like I said, I think, I mean, I can't speak to this location, but as a franchisee owner, I think you are allowed to take, you know, a little bit of a license in terms of what you do with your own store, and it seems like this guy has chosen to... charge for sauces, and I don't know if it, like Justin said, is that 27 cents per packet that you're getting worth the cost of maybe losing a customer?
I'd pay 27 cents to have you, Mike Anderson, return for a subsequent order. He jumped over a dollar to save a quarter. Let's go to, oh, this is a bastard move here. John in Baltimore, good morning.
Morning, guys.
Morning.
Hey.
I went to a establishment. I was in the drive-through lane. And when I was getting my food, the person handed me my drink, and it was like an inch and a half down from the top.
Ooh.
And I said, can you top this off? And she throws a scoop of ice in it.
Oh, damn.
Damn.
I park and storm inside.
Oh, there's a crime scene investigator later on in there. No, they talk about what happened in that restaurant for years to come. Mike, would you like to respond to some detractors?
Oh, yeah. I'm looking right at it.
Here we go. Let's start here with... Next on the Anderson agenda, Mike is a total dick to an employee who doesn't set policy or pricing. I wouldn't risk my job just because you want a little bit of extra sauce. My bosses say you have to pay. You have to pay.
Yeah, like you just said earlier, Mike, you would be, if you were working there, you'd be just handing out sauces willy-nilly.
Well,
you'd get fired. And then you'd be out of a job. Maybe this woman has kids in an apartment
to
pay
be
for.
Un-American.
Like Mike throws out rice at a wedding. He'll chuck sauces at a... chicken
Look,
joint.
I mean, how much does it cost to manufacture that little thing? Probably a fraction.
It's not
of a
her.
Cent.
She's not the. She's just following the rules.
Someone else writes, Mike. Literally, no one in that store is paid enough to care about your butt hurt at being charged for sauce.
How could anybody defend this sort of thing? How dare you, Jim? You're blocked.
Jim's on a 24-hour timeout because he stands in solidarity with that corporation.
I don't want to know what kind of person can defend somebody charging.
Probably
sauce.
People who work in those jobs.
People that are paid to. If they find out that they give away one more free blue cheese, they are going to be given a little pink slip. Let's talk to one more person here. Let's go to D. White Marsh. D, good morning, love.
Hey, good morning. How are you?
How you doing, sweetie?
I'm doing well. So I went to a certain coffee establishment that after I went a few times, I realized they were charging me for the Splenda. It gets worse because I addressed it with them to where me and the manager got into an argument for 30 minutes comparing the price of Equal versus Sugar versus Splenda.
Uh-huh.
So I escalated it and I decided to wait a week. I called in to find out when that manager would be in. I made sure to go in and say, I would like to order this drink, and I would like to speak to the manager, please. And so she came and, you know, was all flustered, and we're like, ma'am, we explained it. And it's like, no, it's okay. And I picked up out of a blue plastic bag my own bag of Splenda, and I opened it, and I put it in my cup, and I said, it's on me. And I just walked out.
Not crazy.
Good for you.
Not crazy.
Good for you.
Freedom Fighter D checking in.
A strong woman.
She's heralded as a hero in her home country.
This is Behind the Curtain with Justin Scott and Spiegel on 98 Rock.
Josh, how you feeling, bud?
I'm feeling fine, but that's a pretty loaded question.
Yeah, well, we found out on Wednesday, I believe, during sports, you have a vitamin deficiency.
That's right. I'm low on D.
Hurting on the D.
I need as much D as possible.
What's your preferred method of getting the D?
Orally.
Oh.
Was that the only thing he brought up?
My doctor?
Your weight also.
he may have brought up my weight.
I hate that, dude. I have such anxiety going to the doctor now because we go to the same doctor.
Together.
Mm-hmm. And I
know, inspect each other.
And I know exactly how he is, and I know how it's going to go. And he's not mean about it. He's not rude about it. But I just know it's coming. You know it's coming.
I think he's given up on trying to get me to lose weight because he barely mentions it.
He's just trying to get you to stay that weight.
He just doesn't want you. First couple of years, he was like, you should really lose some. But now he's just like, okay.
All right, listen, this is where you're at. Just stay there. Yeah. All right. I don't want to see any more of you when you come in. I'm not expecting to see less of you. Just no more.
Is it worse than the dentist shame?
Oh, I hate dental shame.
I don't get any dental shame.
I get dental shame.
Very, very, I keep on top of my teeth. I just went on Tuesday of this past week. She said my gums look great. She did some sort of test on the gums. But it's always usually surrounds like the flossing, right?
Yeah, when he flosses you inside of the chair and are just pulling like entire oysters out from between your teeth. I had a dentist once call in another orthodontist to get a look at this. I'm like, oh, God. I mean, admittedly, the tooth in question had rotted and exploded and all that, and I get it. But, like, come on, I'm not going in there with meth mouth. Like, oh, look at that. How do you work around that? Like, I don't know. Figure it out, but I'm not paying you for the critique. Josh has got a vitamin deficiency. Here's how he's getting all that D. Coming up.
He's more D, man. He's more D in his life.
Got a D deficiency.
The doctor said, you go to the pharmacy, you get a bottle of vitamin D, and you swallow all that D.
I take a vitamin D pill a day, Josh.
Do you?
Yes, I do.
And, so I have to take it. I have to take...
How many milligrams?
It goes by units.
Yeah, it's...
How many units?
Yeah, units a day.
Yeah. How many utes?
It goes by utes.
So it's like 50,000 units a week. So I take 10,000 Monday through Friday.
I'd appreciate it if you brought the pills in here so I could watch you take that day. Because I want to make sure that you're getting it, not just getting a prescription and not using it. Oh, I went to the doctor.
Yeah, I would like you to bring it in here.
I want to see you take the D.
And I would like to get my hands on that D.
Yes, can we see the D? I want to see
your D. It's not purple, is it?
What?
No, it's actually yellow.
Oh, it's yellow.
Oh, well, yellow. Turn that down, turn this
Oh,
up.
Really?
Yeah.
Yes.
That's I got some yellow pills. They're not vitamin D, let me tell you.
Was this routine checkup or did you go because...
Just a blood test. I mean, it was a routine checkup.
That's the only problem you have is vitamin D deficiency?
Yeah, I'm perfect.
Good shape, brother.
I'm perfect otherwise.
Well done.
I got to go back and get some more blood work.
The worst is when the pill like gets stuck in your throat. Yeah, when you feel it, it like hurts.
Oh man, yeah. If you don't like drink like milk is easy to get the D down with. But
if you drank milk, you wouldn't have a vitamin D deficiency.
What happens is you gag on the D, and then you got to drink more water.
Wash it down. You're gonna feel better. No, you can just go outside and get the D.
What did he say caused this?
He didn't say it. I asked him. That's what I thought. You know, because I don't go out and. He said that, I don't know, he didn't really give me a reason.
Symptoms may include difficulty thinking clearly.
Yeah, that's me. Yeah, that's
bone pain?
Uh-huh.
You got bone pain?
I always have bone pain.
You ever fracture your bone?
You can read 17 symptoms he's going to have every one of them.
You ever fracture your bone?
Every night.
Yep.
Muscle weakness?
All the time.
What about your bones soft at all? You got any soft bones? Soft bones?
Only late at night.
Uh-huh. And unexplained fatigue. Check.
Jesus. Not at all.
Got them all, buddy. Tell you what, you got a soft bone. Some of that D will stiffen you up quick. Put a rod in your back.
My life is changing now that I've got D.
It's time to go behind the curtain with Justin Scott and Spiegel on 98 Rock.
Yeah. Bruce Campbell joined us on Tuesday earlier in the week. Evil Dead. Evil Dead 2, Army of Darkness, Drag Me to Hell. And the guy's great. The guy is just, I don't know, he's sort of figured his career out. He's very at peace with where he is in his career. Unlike like that, the example I make sometimes of someone that's not at peace with their career is that Jimmy Walker, Dynamite. He
he desperately wanted to be considered something other than what he was from that series, to where he won't even say Dynamite, stuff like that. Like, people that try and buck what they are, you'll hear him say it very early on in this interview coming up. He ain't digging ditches. What a great, just a level-headed man.
Yeah, he was, and I looked up pictures of him. God, he's gotten better looking with age. He's kind of got that, the sides of his hair have gone gray, that very, very distinguished look now. And it's funny you say that, because I was just watching another video. Pauly Shore sat down with Joe Rogan for the Joe Rogan podcast, and he was talking about the same thing about his career and how it kind of like essentially dried up.
Yeah.
And how he looks back on like what it used to be, and he gets sad. The Weasel, sad.
Yeah, well, you know, you can't go and just piss off everybody that you come across at every comedy club that you're in, you weird thin-eyed diva, and expect them to have you back.
Yeah, even when he was up here, he was kind of a douche.
Oh, dude, that's all their stories is. It's Andy Dick, Screech, and Pauly Shore. Now, take a guess. What do you think Bruce Campbell's net worth is? You had to take a guess.
$5 million.
Higher.
Ooh, what's up, Bruce?
What do you think?
$8 million.
Higher.
$10
million is Bruce Campbell worth.
Nice.
Good. Hear about it now. Behind the curtain, we talk to Bruce Campbell. Justin Scott and Spiegel joined on the phone. Legendary actor. I refuse to call him a B-movie actor because the man takes any film and turns it into an A-production. He's got Hail to the Chin, Further Confessions of a B-movie actor. Ladies and gentlemen, Bruce Campbell. Good morning, sir.
That was a fine introduction. That was just fine. I like all that living legend stuff. I never get tired of that.
Well, I mean, between Thank Army of Darkness, Evil Dead, I mean, you coined the term boomstick. How many people have enjoyed themselves a Halloween with a prosthetic shotgun from the elbow down?
I've signed a lot of boomsticks. I've signed a lot of chainsaws, too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So talk to me about the book, Hail to the Chin, Further Confessions of a B-Movie Actor. I just love how, I'm not going to say self-deprecating, but you're so very self-aware and at peace and appreciative of where you are in the scheme of the Hollywood hierarchy, and your fans do as well. We get a taste of that in this book.
Well, you know, I'm not digging ditches, so I'm grateful every day. You know?
Yeah.
It's a tricky industry. You guys are in showbiz. You know that you got to deal with higher-ups. You got contracts that come and go. Sometimes they go, you know.
Yeah.
And we all know that the door is waiting for us at any given time. So I think the trick is enjoy it and, you know, try and give the people what they're sort of looking for. And there's a lot of ways actors can make money now. These conventions, boy, have saved a lot of actors' necks, let me tell you.
Oh, yeah. We've seen all that. I mean, not acting, but the movie, like, The Wrestler, remember that, where he was at, like, one of those conventions? And it can be that sometimes, Bruce. Did you have a low point, a lowest point, where were you like, man, ah?
Yeah, when my first wife asked for a divorce, because I was just never there.
Yeah.
And she's like, dude, this just ain't going to work. You know, you seem like you're an okay guy, but I never see you.
Right.
So see ya. and that's when you go. And I offered to get out. I said,
oh, wow.
I said, I'll quit. And she's like, no, you won't. And she was right.
I thought you were going to say talking to us was the low point of your life.
Well, there's one thing of what you think and what you say.
Thank you for not saying that, though. Yeah.
And, Bruce, that voice that you hear is that of our newsman, Josh Spiegel, who's gone on record many times throughout his life as saying that Spider-Man 2, directed by your high school friend Sam Raimi, is his favorite film of all time. Josh, any Spider-Man 2 questions?
You actually are correct in your assessment, because I saw that movie. Sam was shooting a complete piece of crap, Man with a Screaming Brain, and I say that because I directed it in Bulgaria, right?
Right.
And Spider-Man 2's coming out. They just built this brand new 400 seat stadium theater in Sofia, and that was special because this town, you know, didn't have anything like that. Sam arranged for a print for us to show it to the crew. And I got to tell you, it was the most incredible thing we ever saw. And, I mean, he nailed it. He nailed being a director of these movies. And it's a tough thing, superhero movies. You're combining special effects and telling a big story on a big canvas. And so he really did absolutely nail it. And when the lights came up, we were even more depressed because we went, oh, let's go back to work on our crappy little movie.
And what is it like being friends with a director? Is he really controlling? Is he trying, like, if you
Sam out- always bossy as hell.
I'll order for us,
boss,
Bruce.
Boss, I'll order dinner. Boss. And I give him lip, you know, and the crew now, like, I did a small part on Oz the Great and Powerful. And he's bossing me around, something about my lousy acting. And I go, yeah, Sam, well, you know, if I had a director, I could figure this out. And the crew, like, they just gasp because now he's Sam Raimi, right?
Right.
But you know, he's not just your boyhood pal. He's Mr. Director. So
yes.
It's great to watch, though. And Sam always, we could never afford Sam's ideas.
How do you like
so
the...
he should be working in big movies.
We're talking to Bruce Campbell of If Chins Could Kill... And is the book. And how do you like the voiceover work?
It's okay. You know, you radio guys have it. You know, it's a nice, comfortable studio. You come in, and it's all pretty civil. But it can be a little repetitive if
right.
you're doing. You know, you got to do a lot of military jargon, like I did Call of Duty and some other stuff. And in some games, you have to die. Every way that a player can die.
Yeah.
Which can be like 15 ways, and you got to record it all, and players in the course of their lifetime might hear two or three ways that you die. It's a lot of extra material that most people don't even hear. And then we threw in some stuff too, like if a guy just keeps clicking on something, we'll eventually go, there's nothing there.
Move on to the next objective.
Yeah.
You're so well known for the you know, the Evil Dead films and Army of Darkness, and one of the films that I loved that you did, and I was bummed to hear that you weren't going to be involved in a sequel, if it even ever got off the ground, was 2000, I think it was 2001, 2002, Bubba Hotep, where you played...
Bubba.
It was just so great. You were Elvis Presley. John Kennedy was in the damn thing. You had Bob Ivy as Bubba. And
a very kooky movie. It was the weirdest script I had ever read.
It's so crazy. It's like an Elvis that never died, basically fighting the supernatural.
Yeah, what if Elvis had never died? What if he has cancer on his penis? And what if a mummy was sucking the souls... the old people and the rest in the rest home. And so he teams up, yeah, with a guy who thinks he's JFK to defeat the mummy. And the funny thing is, it has a little bit of a poignant story of what happens to old people. It really has a nice theme. A lot of scripts are missing a theme. A lot of stories don't have a theme.
I guess I never thought about that. Yeah, to not throw away
these heroes.
Well,
that's what drew me to it, because it's like the movie plays out more like that. Oh, yeah, and they fight a mummy. The mummy is kind of almost an afterthought in the movie, and that's what I liked about it. It was something different. And, you know, who doesn't like playing Elvis? I mean, but the good news is nobody had played him at 68, so I wasn't going to be compared to Kurt Russell or, you know, any of those jokers.
So, Bruce, before we, you know, let you go, you know you got a busy day ahead. Of all the films that you ever did, of any of the series that you ever took part in, is there a film that you felt deserved a sequel that never got one that you still wish you could film a follow-up to?
No.
Fantastic.
Because like with Bubba Hotep, for example, there was the opportunity to do another one, and I backed away from it just because I thought, let's let that movie be a nice special little movie. You know, I've done sequels, so I can't really say this with a perfectly straight face, but not everything needs a sequel. Let these little gems just be these little gems sometimes. Because what happens is people will stay with it, and then when you make a clunker, they go, ah, what a piece of crap.
Yeah, speaking of movies that didn't need a sequel that you were the literally only good part of, Escape from New York's Escape from L.A., where you were the insane Surgeon General with that carved-up ass human Ken doll-looking face. I love your movies. I can't wait to read the book, Hail to the Chin, Further Confessions of a B-Movie Actor. Bruce Campbell, it's been a pleasure, sir. Thank you for taking
the
time
this morning.
Thank
you very much.
This is Behind the Curtain with Justin Scott and Spiegel on 98 Rock.
So we visited the concept of something that I had to do recently, maybe a week or two back, of calling 311, the non-emergency number. And Josh, it's been the better part of a week since we've talked about this.
Yeah.
It definitely didn't happen yesterday on tape, where
Your relative does what?
Well, in New York, you can call 311 and just ask where the street fairs are. And I was conferenced in, so I listened. I could confirm that this happened. This
God, I would have loved. What was the whole situation just surrounding that day?
He just wanted to find street fairs. He loves.
Is this your friend?
Yeah. And he
the dude with all the sweaters?
No.
What sweaters?
This is Avi.
Oh, Avi, got it.
His friend Avi, who still lives in New York City. Now, were you going to attend a street fair with him?
No, we were just talking, and he said, oh, you know, hold on, and he conferenced me in.
So that was just part of a little interesting part of your phone call together, is that he's like, hey, while I'm on the phone with you, I'm thinking about going to a street fair today. Let me call 311 and have you listen.
Meanwhile, street fairs.
You had no intention of even going. You weren't even in New York.
And I was shocked that you could do that with 311 would give you that information, and they would stay on the line and go over that with you.
Hypothetically. Obviously, we dial 911. Do not do that in case of an emergency. It's you got to get someone here now. Fire, robbery, shooting, whatever. Would we get in trouble if we dialed 311 on the air just to ask for some information? Do they know?
Well, you have to tell the people they're on the air.
The whole recording thing?
Yeah.
I feel like we should dial them once a week. We should just ask them. It's a great segment. Hey, what's up, 311? You know, who's our 311 operator of the week? Can we call them and find out the... What do we ask about here in Baltimore? Because obviously most people that are going to dial something 11, there's going to be a 9 in front of it around these parts. But what do we ask? Stray dog questions?
Why don't we just try the street fair thing?
Let's try the street fair thing. How about that? Coming up this week.
I don't think it'll go that well in Baltimore.
Probably not. No, not a lot
we'll
of street
probably
fairs.
Get hung up on.
Yeah, real quick. But that's not my department. Coming up, I had to dial 311 and so did you. I'm behind the curtain.
Do you know that in Baltimore, Maryland, January of 1999, we were the first city to implement the use of 311, Baltimore, Maryland?
Really?
Yep. Chicago initiated the first comprehensive 311 system by providing information and tracking system services from intake to resolution, but Baltimore, Maryland was the first to use 311 as a way to contact police in a non-emergency setting. We literally just had so much bull going on here that we had to have another something 11 number. 911 was just being blown up so they couldn't have people calling 911 for every last cat caught in a tree, every last fender bender ding and dent disagreement in front of a bar. They had to introduce 311.
Well, now they have at least in the city, I don't know about other places, but here it is, the Baltimore 311 app.
Whoa.
And I've used it quite a bit because you don't gotta call anybody, you don't have to call, you don't have to talk to anybody, it's anonymous. Mm-hmm. And I blasted some of my neighbors because they had a bunch of like in the alley, they had a bunch of garbage in the back of their house that wasn't being picked up. And
sketchy.
It was like all scattered and nasty and it wasn't cleaned up. So I put them on blast and you just send it off anonymously. And then sure enough, I mean, it's quick and efficient. You can send photos of the problem. There's a problem area. Send photos. It's awesome.
Because people dial 911 if they see a big old car accident. Someone's been shot, stabbed, robbed. And instances already happened. There's already been some tragedy of some level. But I had to call it, Mike, it wasn't last week, or was it week before last, I believe?
Yeah, it was a couple weeks ago, I believe.
And we never got around to it, but it was one of the things where I was kind of torn, do I call 311 or do I call 911? Where, as I'm driving College Parkway, shout out Anne Arundel, shout out Richie, you light and traffic covered devil's butt crack. But I see, shocker, dude that's just north of 90 in a Oldsmobile Dreadnought, a vehicle that the trunk and the hood are the exact same length, cloth top, and the dude is all over the road.
Oh.
And I'm looking, and at first I'm laughing because I'm kind of behind him, and I can't see ahead. I just see the two headrests. And I find myself with a space when I finally, he and I turn onto Richie together, and I can put a lane in between us because it opens up to three lanes. I look and he's so short. He's not looking over the wheel. He's looking in the gap beneath the wheel.
Oh my God.
He's so tiny. And he's going no miles per hour on the road.
and the wheel is, it looks like a child holding on to the damn thing.
You called 311, huh?
And I'm thinking,
911.
That was my thing. I'm like, do I dial 911? Because nothing has happened yet, but something's gonna happen. I mean, Richie's always busy, so I dial 311, and I say, "Hey, I'm just passing Mother's on Peninsula. I'm about to pass the Einsteins, and there's one of the greatest generation out here." Piloting a Land Cruiser, and he's just right lane, left lane, center lane, right lane, left lane, shoulder, wherever. He's all over the place, and I finally kind of get around him and just zoom away, and I dial 311 there, like, yes, thank you very much. We'll send a vehicle in the air, and click, the end. Hung up. But I'm wondering, like, you know, should I dial 911? Is that a 311 situation? I feel like 911's like, that's an emergency. There's blood. There's gunshots.
What if he ran somebody over?
Good point. He could have killed someone.
I mean, I'm thinking like that if the 311 person, operator, thought it was a 911 worthy call, they would have either told you to hang up and dial 911 or transfer you to 911. So I guess you were fine because she didn't seem the need for you to do that. So
it's just this is a double conversation here. This is 311, not emergency stuff. Like, would you dial 311 if you're across the street? And you see someone about to make a huge mistake that you can't get to them to talk to them. Like, I don't know. I'm going to throw a stupid example out here. Someone's about to try and fry a frozen turkey. The damn thing's going to explode. But you can't get over to them to tell them, hey, you got to let it get to be room temperature first. You call 311, say, hey, it hasn't happened yet, but in about 15 minutes, you're going to have someone who's covered head to toe in third degree burns. Because they handed their Uncle Jasper their beer and said, hey, watch me fry this turkey.
I know someone in New York who dials 311 to find out where that day's street fairs are.
What?
Are you related to this person?
I am not related to this person, but...
indirectly related?
No, I'm not. Maybe I am. But apparently it's okay to do that because the person, this person three-wayed me in.
Whoa.
And the operator didn't hang up. The operator gave all the information where the street fairs were. So I'm curious, you know, how far you can go with
that. Yeah, I never heard of that.
311.
Wow. Yeah,
street
like
street fair directory.
A street fair. What's the weather going to be like? Are there any roaming packs of feral dogs that control the downtown city areas?
Yeah, what are the limits?
Yes. What's the spice that McCormick's going to be putting out today? Should I drive through the garlic salt fog?
That would be nice.
That'd be real nice. 410-338-1098. Give us a ring if you've ever had to dial the non-emergency 311. 911. Hey, someone just ran up, shot myself and the companion I was with in the face with a pump-action shotgun, stole our cell phone. Hey, my car was just taken from me. Hey, I think there's an intruder inside of the house. That's 911 action. What do you do with that 311 stuff? I saw an elderly driver on the road just swerving all over the place and said, hey, it's not an emergency yet, but I feel like it could be.
You want? I have my city app, the 311 app, and it has a list of all the stuff.
Yeah, give me the rundown of stuff that you can report.
You can do like graffiti removal,
mm-hmm.
maybe high grass or weeds or trash.
Really?
Maybe somebody hasn't mowed their lawn and that's pissing you off. Like you call 311 on your neighbor that hasn't mowed their lawn. That's kind of cool.
That's amazing.
Pothole, street light out, damaged sidewalk, messed up traffic signals or signs, abandoned vehicles, a parking complaint. Somebody's blocking like one of the corners or something like that.
Gotcha.
Sewer
gotcha.
Overflow, hydrant open. Water leak, stuff like that.
Mike, how
aggressive
close?
Animal.
Ooh.
Ooh. What?
Ooh, yes.
Food facility complaints. Liquor or adult entertainment complaints. Icy, snowy conditions. You can do a lot of stuff on this 311 app.
Yes, 311. I was told on the website that this strip club was bottomless. Turns out it's not. Got a message here from James. James, good contributor to the show, says his neighbor will call 311 on him when his dog wanders into her yard. Just wanders into the yard. She calls 311. Says, get this guy's dog off my effing lawn.
Yeah, well, keep your dog in your yard, dummy.
James, can I get that dog on a leash, handsome man? You got some texts over there, 410-338-1098?
I do not.
I got some calls. Let's go to the phones. Yay. Will. Hamden. Will, what's up, buddy?
Morning.
Hi.
Hey, my story is I moved right off Cold Spring Lane, and to get to the metro, they had all this overbrush of trees with branches and stuff.
Yeah.
And, like, the kids from Poly Sci, they would, like, literally go in the middle barrier to go to school. And so even a guy in a wheelchair, or electric wheelchair, couldn't get through it. So I called 311, and by the end of the week, boom, all gone.
You're a hero. Got that tree trimmed up. Let's see. Oh, here's one. This might have been more of a 911 call than a 311 call, but we'll see. We'll let Scott tell the tale in Clarksville. Good morning.
How you doing, guys?
How you doing, buddy?
Well, I'm pretty good. Love the show.
Love you.
Yeah, I was actually, this is about 12 years ago, maybe. I was in my senior year in high school, and a bunch of us were walking home, and ahead of us was this girl that I remember specifically only because of this guy. This car, it must have been like an old Buick Century or something like that. Kind of creeper hanging outside the side of his car with a photography camera just taking pictures of her as she was walking. This is about 15, 20 feet ahead of us.
Whoa.
And just out of nowhere taking pictures. So I waited until I got home. I actually tried remembering the license plate. Called 311 because actually at the time I didn't know if I should call 911 or 311.
Right.
And, yeah, and they told me that there was nothing they can do. The guy wasn't breaking any laws or anything, and basically said that I wasted their time.
It's public, right? You're allowed to, like, take pictures in public or something?
Note to self.
I guess. I mean, it was kind of creepy.
What did you try to do to remember that license plate? Did you keep saying it to yourself over and over in your head?
Yeah, that's actually what I did. I, you know, my brother was actually walking with me, and he was trying to talk to me, and I was like, you know, dude, this is, like, this could be serious.
Yes, I got to remember this. 465-ILM. 465-ILM. 465. I love men. I love men. I love men. You got to say stuff in your head over and over again. Yeah, that's, God, that's sketchy because it's not an emergency. He's not doing anything illegal.
Well, they didn't know that at the time.
But this guy's got one of those telescopic lenses like some war photographer shooting it at a 15-year-old's ass on the way home from high school. I think you did the right thing,
friend. Let's send Mike out with a giant camera and just start photographing people. Yeah. See what happens.
Yeah, see how quickly you get box cuttered
out there.
Somebody
says they called 311 on a homeless woman performing a seance under the light of a red box at the local Walgreens.
Jesus. Oh, yeah. Texter, respond with the address of exactly where that happened. I'd like to send down there and conjure the dark arts with her and then pick up a copy of Despicable Me 3.
Another texter says, today I learned 311 is a thing. They never knew.
I know about that. It's a non-emergency number.
Yeah.
Let's go to, Sean in Baltimore. Sean, good morning.
Good morning, guys. How you doing?
Glad to have you.
Good, buddy.
Okay. This was this past St. Patrick's Day. I'm driving my way into work on Falls Road, just inside the Beltway near the Brooklyn Fire Station. There's a big horse farm on the right-hand side. Mm-hmm. I look to my right, and I see four horses coming up the roadway to that mansion, whatever it was. They had broken out. And I look at my rearview mirror, and I see four of them follow me down Falls Road.
Oh, my God.
So I call 311. And tell them there's four horses running down the road. And you can hear in the lady's voice, how much has he been drinking already on St. Patrick's Day at 7:30? So I had four horsemen in my rearview mirror.
Oh, my God. You had the four horsemen? Arn Anderson, Tully Blanchard, Ric Flair, all in your rearview mirror? Good Lord. Next thing you know, Barry Windham's going to be throwing body slams on you. Let's go to Emily Bel Air. Good morning. What's up, Emily?
Hi, good morning. How are you?
Hi.
Hi. My husband called 311 on the ice cream man on Easter Sunday one year.
Maybe really? Ask why.
Because he was basically sitting outside of our house on our street for about what seemed like half an hour. And it was like 9:30 on a Sunday, so he was old and crotchety, so he decided to call.
And it's got that annoying bell, right?
I was gonna say, was the bell ringing?
Was he playing
the
music?
He was just like sitting there.
Yeah, it was a da na 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 na.
He was just playing the whole time.
Yeah, I would have called.
Yeah, hell
too.
Yeah, I would have called.
Yeah, I think usually when they stop, they're supposed to turn off the song or something. But it was constant for about 30 minutes. On, you know, I mean, 9:30.
Or he could have just walked out and rapped on the window and been like, "Hey, hurry up!"
Yeah, I know.
God, just imagine hearing this around the clock.
Go away! I swear to God, please go away!
We now take you behind the curtain with Justin Scott and Spiegel on 98 Rock.
You hear a conversation coming up about bogus products. A guy, or actually a girl, I believe, Chinese fantasy novelist, took a $10,000 swig of whiskey that Scotch experts are now claiming to have been fake. And I didn't realize, and I learned something during this break, you know, wine gets better the longer it's bottled. I guess I didn't realize that, and you'll hear me say this in the break coming up, that whiskey, it can age in the cask, but once it's bottled, that's it. It doesn't get any better. So it's a 200-year-old bottle. It doesn't matter if it's been in that bottle for 180 of those years. You have a 20-year-old bottle of scotch. Now, I wonder, what's the oldest aged bottle of scotch out there? I mean, or at some point, does it get sour? Like, what point is it just become absurd that you're aging it so long?
Yeah, I don't know. I always wonder that, because, like, I still have a bottle of Johnny Walker Blue that you gave me.
Mm-hmm.
And you gave it to me probably 4 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Long time ago.
And I haven't even, it's still in the box.
Whoa.
But I don't know. Like, if I keep that thing for 20 years and I open it, will it taste exactly like a bottle of Johnny Walker Blue that's 2 years old?
Can I give you the top three most expensive Scotch whiskeys aged for the longest time?
Please.
Gordon and McPhail Generations Morlock 75-year-old single malt whiskey priced at $25,000 a bottle.
So that's aged
75 years.
But you say it has to be aged in the barrel, right?
In the barrel. In the
bottle.
Not
so
in the,
like a barrel a sat barrel. There with this stuff in it for 75 years.
Coming in at number two, Macallan Lalique. I think I'm saying that right. 62-year-old Scotch, single malt Scotch whiskey. $30,000, and number one, and actually the youngest of all three of these expensive scotches, I'm going to botch this name, Balvenie, 50-year-old single malt Scotch whiskey, $37,149. So hear about it now. Someone got a $10,000 swig of whiskey and turned out to be fake. I'm behind the curtain. Chinese fantasy novelist Zhang Wei on vacation in Switzerland. And apparently this fantasy novelist Wei flush with cash.
Must be nice.
Must be so nice to be able to spend $10,000 on one shot of whiskey. Chinese tourist pays $10,000 for what is alleged to be a 140-year-old scotch at a bar in Switzerland that some experts are now looking at afterwards saying, homeboy, you might, I don't know if it's a guy or a girl, you might have got taken to the woodshed. You might have had someone pour, it could have been whatever, swill, you know, old Uncle Thumb whiskey into a nice ass bottle, charge you $10,000 for it, and you were none the wiser. The proprietor of the bar, I believe it was called the Devil's Place Whiskey Bar in St. Moritz, Sandro Bernasconi, opened the bar's prized possession, an ultra rare bottle of Macallan 1878. And he was actually worried that the cork would have fallen apart or the whiskey would be badder after all the time in the bottle. But the big spender, $10,000 for a 0.67-ounce drink, was happy with it after spending $10,000. But then experts say that the bottle was most likely fake.
Wow.
Yeah, after seeing it, said that it came from a batch of fake Macallans from Italy back in early 2000. They were such convincing knockoffs that the company, Macallan, which is a scotch, you and I have had it before, has even bought 100 bottles themselves. It turned out to all be fake. Lot to unpack here. $10,000 for a sip of whiskey. What?
No. Never.
I've had amazing whiskeys before. I've been blessed to have some friends that are of means give me a sip of something very, very nice. When I got this job, I got a bottle of Johnny Walker Blue, which is very expensive, and it's tasty, but it's almost for the ability to say that I have Johnny Blue. If you give me a couple of beers, you put a Johnny Red, a Johnny Blue, and a Johnny Black in front of me, my simple ass is going to have a lot of trouble telling the difference. But $10,000.
Yeah, I mean, I got a buddy who's like a foodie, and he spends lots of money on dinners.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, yeah, I get that that's really, you know, unique, interesting food and prepared in unique and interesting ways. But the price tag associated with that, you can't justify it.
My palate isn't that refined that I can tell the difference between one of the $5 all-you-can-eat appetizers at a TGI Fridays and then the weird lotus petal-infused foie gras vinaigrette duck confit foam reduction prepared by a monk that only cooks once a year. I don't think I can tell that difference. And the proprietor of the bar has gone on to say that if it is proved that this sip of liquor turns out to be fake, he will return the $10,000 to
nice.
The tourist. That's very, very sweet of him. But it got us thinking about a bogus purchases. And Lord knows, maybe this is...
It says that the... You know, it says 1878, right? So that's what you think. But it was matured for 27 years. And that the whiskey is guaranteed absolutely pure. But it's just a completely fake label. And it says Roderick Kemp. It says his name's on the label. He didn't even own Macallan or Talisker at the time.
So it didn't even exist in 1878?
I don't know. Just totally fake.
God. Imagine getting taken to the woodshed for that. Because I got pissed once ordering boxes of... There's these series of Transformers. There's like six in a box. It's like a collector's set. And I order a bunch of them because I thought I got like the deal of the century on eBay. And I order all... The photos are great. Mm-hmm. The pictures are great. Should have known it's coming from Shanghai. So I'm going to get Shanghai'd. I'm going to get taken to the Chinese woodshed. All right, I got bamboozled by a flim-flam man. And... These things show up, and they're so knockoff. The packaging is all like from a printer, and they're scotch taped to the edge of some garbage box. And I open it up, and the toys are inside are all brittle and garbagey, and the logos aren't right, and the wheels are all different colored. And the guy just disappeared off into the void of the internet. I couldn't get my money back. But I didn't spend like a ton of money. I'm not talking like $10,000 worth of 0.67 ounce alcohol.
Talking about a dude, a Chinese dude that went on vacation.
Chinese dudes.
Thought he was getting some super exclusive scotch to the price of $10,000 a shot. And when news started to spread about this, the whiskey connoisseurs and scotch connoisseurs and from all around the world were like, whoa, 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 wait a minute, wait a minute, wait a minute.
Right.
It doesn't seem legit. And sure enough... Apparently, out of Italy, they produced a whole bunch of knockoff bottles of this stuff, and this bottle appears to be one of those knockoffs. So, dude, spend $10,000 on swill. Ugh. I wouldn't spend $10,000 even if it was the real stuff.
See, now check this out.
For what?
Unlike wine, whiskey does not mature in the bottle. So even if you keep a 12-year-old bottle for 100 years, it is just forever a 12-year-old whiskey. As long as the bottle is kept out of direct sunlight, the Scotch whiskey will neither improve nor deteriorate. So, really, if you read the story, it had been, I believe, matured for 27 years. So, all it was a 27-year-old bottle that had been around for 140 years. So, it wasn't like this stuff was matured for 140 effing years. For $10,000, I better reach orgasm the minute that hits my tongue. Yeah. I can't think of what a $10,000 bottle of scotch tastes like Scotch Anderson.
Well, I was going to say, I don't know about you guys, but whenever something is super expensive, I don't care how good the meal is, like let's say a dinner or something, a steak dinner, I can never quite enjoy it as much as a meal that's, you know, good, but not, you know, $50.
But it's also, you know,
I mean, we're like value and quality intersect is where I fully enjoy something.
Yeah, because when you're sitting there and you're like, because then you always go, it is a good steak, but is like, it $100 good?
You're like holding
is
up
it $100
your fork
good?
With a morsel on there. You're like, this is probably like $5 right here as you put it in your mouth.
Well, I'm thinking that, you know, this, oh my God, this is so worth it when I'm hungry. and the food is there and I'm eating, but then the fullness sets in and I think to myself, I could feel this exact same way right now had I had a $6 basket of chicken tenders. And all I'm going to, but instead of like $6, I'm about to spend $200 on this high-end fancy pants steak dinner. Let's go to the phones. Times that you have purchased something like this poor Chinese fantasy novelist and found out you got taken to the woodshed. Let's call Ronnie here. Ronnie, good morning.
Morning.
What's up, Ronnie?
I used to drive a tow truck years ago, and I collected die-cast tow trucks and the bigger ones. So I was watching this one on eBay for a while, pretty cool looking big truck, and I decided to buy it. It was $75, and it comes in the mail, and it's a little teeny bit bigger than a Matchbox car.
Oh! Yeah, I got a text like that. The text says the guy thought he was buying like three guitars. They were like, I was 16.
Thank you, Ron.
And a really good deal on guitars on eBay. After ordering three, it turns out they were miniature guitars. They were only 12 inches.
Oh, yeah.
And it said it was at the bottom in really small print. This guy thought he was getting three badass guitars, and they were just like miniature guitars.
Yeah, well, dumb me bought a Megatron bust, the Decepticon villain that I thought was just going to be like the size of my head. Like I could just like dress it up and put shirts on it. Spent $75 on the thing. Again, thought I got myself one humdinger of a deal. Shows up a little bigger than a golf ball.
Oh.
I had that box, and I'm like, what's it? And I open up like, you are f***ing kidding me.
How much?
$75.
Dude.
But I go back and I read the ad, and it's plain as day on there. This thing is only 2.5 inches tall with a 3-square-inch base. I'm just an idiot. I'm like, look at the size of it. And it's got to be the size of my head. Why read the rest of the number words? Just click buy it now. Stupid. Let's go to Tom in Baltimore. Good morning.
Hey, what's going on, guys?
What's up, buddy?
Tom?
Hey, not much. Yeah, I went to a Chinese website, and I was looking for a guitar, and I found one on there, and I bought it, and when it came to my house, it was like a plastic kid's guitar.
Oh, man.
Dude.
Yeah. That sucks sometimes.
Dude,
it really does.
Mike, I wanted to do a whole break, remember, about all the T-shirts that I've been buying? Like, I've been buying stuff off of Amazon. I bought, like, a Minor Threat T-shirt.
Yeah.
I bought a Mobb Deep T-shirt. And I've had to spend more time looking to find out. This might just be a break about garbage Chinese goods. I'm with you, Trump. Cut off the damn imports from them. And they're all misshapen. The logos are screwed up.
Here's another text about the Chinese goods.
Chinese purchases.
Guy collects knives, and in Alaska, his little brother thought he was getting him like this really nice handcrafted blade with an antler holder.
Yeah.
And then when he got it, the blade clearly said made in China, and the holder was made out of plastic, antler.
So you got some garbage plastic antler that you can't even cut butter with. Let's go to Rob in Cockeysville. Rob, I'm reading the description here, and I feel like this is your fault.
Yeah, it probably is. I was a young man. I was 17 years old. Good morning, guys. How y'all
doing?
Good. How are you, buddy?
Good morning.
I'm doing all right. I bought a bike from a crackhead down on Broadway near the Broadway Market.
Yeah.
He's like, hey, man, I got this bike for $15. I'm like, look, bro, I got $5. No, I had $3. So I talked him down. I said, I'll take the bike for $3. You meet me at the Zeus Diner. I'll give you the other $2. I jump on this bike, and both the tires are flat, and the handlebars just collapsed. Like, the bolts weren't tight, and I turn around, and he vanished like a crackhead.
Gone. Just took off like Batman talking to Commissioner Gordon.
I had a buddy that sold me a watch in, middle school.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a really cool watch. I'm like, this thing is badass. And then, like, I get it home, and I'm looking at it, and, like, half the screen, like, it had, like, a digital clock face on it, and it, like, filled up as it, like, went around, and, like, half of it was not working. And I was like, you son of a bitch!
You screwed
me
on this.
Faulty goods. And he knew it.
Someone else writes a story here that my girlfriend bought me for my birthday what was supposedly a very nice Rolex watch.
Oh, God.
And it turns out it was a genuine Rolex.
Okay.
And then when I went to dinner with her family, father looks over and goes, oh, there's my watch. She stole it from her own dad and gave it to her boyfriend. That's not so much of a ripoff. You were just dating a real piece of sure. Let's go to Frank in Harford County. Frank, good morning. Thank you for calling, buddy.
Hey, how you guys doing?
How are you,
dope.
Frank?
All right. Hey, I was probably like 17, probably like 1997. I save up my money. I'm in Ocean City. I go into the jewelry store and I buy a necklace.
had a nice charm on it. I mean, I was young, and that stuff was in. But I get home probably like 2 weeks later, the charm breaks in half. It was just plastic, like dipped in gold paint or something.
Oh, God.
The worst.
I mean, you've got the classic thing where you buy what you think is some nice high-end gold jewelry, and the next thing you know, your skin's the color of a fresh
green
avocado.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, he was young and dumb. You know, I've got a saying about
easy
young Amish
easy
people. Young, dumb, and full of corn. We're having fun this morning. We're having a great time. Let's go to Alan in Tyson's Corner. Alan, good morning.
Good morning, guys. How you doing?
Hey, bud.
Good, good. Hey, so I about a year ago, I saw this ad on Instagram, and so figured it was pretty legit since it was on Instagram.
Yeah.
And it was for a bunch of Oakleys that were like 70 or 80% off. So, you know, $10, $15 a pair. So I bought about a dozen of them, thinking, you know, worst case scenario, I could just resell them on eBay, make a little bit of money. Well, they show up, and it was just absolutely the worst.
It was just all fake. I mean, like a nice pair of Oakleys, a regular pair of Oakleys is like $100, like a standard pair. So you thought that somehow somebody found a box of these things that fell off the back of a box truck somewhere and was just trying to move them quick.
Right. And, you know, obviously I was wary of it because it looked too good to be true, but the website looked legit. There was no indication that it was some Chinese sweatshop, but that's what it turned out to be.
Oh, buddy. So let's, speaking of Chinese sweatshops, Jerry and Glen Burnie with another story of Chinese purchased goods. We really need to cut off trade agreements with them. Good morning, Jerry.
Hey, what's up, guys? Just want to say shout out. I won tickets to the murder mystery, and I had a really, really good time that Saturday night show. I just wanted to thank you guys.
Thank you for
coming. I
didn't
know what to expect.
Thank you very much. Were you at the early show or the late show?
The late show.
Oof, sorry.
He said he had a good time, though.
Yeah.
The late show.
It was a little wild, but yeah, we had a good time.
A little rough.
But I was calling. I had a buddy of mine. He did a lot of internet stuff, and he actually found basically, in China, if you could get the right connect, they'll actually do what they call a third shift, meaning, like, let's say in the Nike factory, they'll actually make custom Nikes that you could call a bootleg, but they're made in the factory by the same Chinese people that are making the ones that are being sold in the stores. But you can order them custom through them and get a third shift. But the problem is you get, like, ripped off every third shipment that you get, but you could get 20 Nikes, custom colors, and all kinds of different goods if you know the right people.
All right, well, you're the right people. Mike, putting them on hold. I want some Nikes.